Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, Chuck.
Joshers.
You were about to be in Guatemala, buddy.
Correction, dude. We are in Guatemala as this is playing.
Wow.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, it's the magic of technology.
So tell them what we're plugging here.
Well, we're going to be down in Guatemala finding out whether education can actually alleviate poverty or not, right?
Yep.
And while we're down there, we're going to be blogging the whole time.
Hopefully, as we speak, there will be blog posts. And if we don't have internet access, it'll be up next week.
Yeah, the internet in Guatemala may or may not be spotty. We haven't figured it out yet, but if not, they'll be up the following week, right?
Indeed.
Okay, well, you can check those out at the blogs at HowStuffWorks.com. Chuck and I share a blog called Stuff You Should Know Appropriately Enough, right?
Yes.
That's that, right?
On with the show.
On with the podcast. Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And Chuck?
Yes, Josh.
I'm going to paint a scene for you.
Literally? That might take a while.
No, with my words.
Well, what's that canvas and easel doing in here, then?
This is just to help me think.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay?
Let's hear it.
I'm just going to draw stick figures right here, so don't expect too much.
Gotcha.
Imagine, right, that you are tied to a pole.
Okay, so far so good.
You're bound with your hands behind your back.
Less good.
And your ankles are also bound to said pole.
Yeah,
which is looking upright.
Grim.
It's erect.
Sure.
And you notice that there's an awful lot of really dry firewood scattered around you, around this pole.
That's not good.
It's really not good. Even less good is you figuring out that there's some guy... probably some sort of priest or official, maybe an executioner, coming towards you with a torch.
Are there people there?
There are tons of people. All of your neighbors, people in your very small community who you've known your whole life.
Oh, my neighbors would be saying, who's that guy?
Well, this is in a different time.
Okay.
Okay. So, well, let's say that you know all of your neighbors and work with them and trade with them and helped raise their children.
Wow.
Right?
All right.
Healed them when they were sick using herbs and maybe incantations. There
were
better times in the past, right? Now everyone in your town is pointing at you and laughing at you and yelling and calling you horrible names and accusing you of doing horrible things like stealing babies and sucking their blood and
wow.
Yeah, just doing all sorts of terrible stuff, right?
Sure.
And in front of you are your daughters. You have a couple of daughters.
Okay.
And they're being forced to watch this man who's approaching you with the torch. But not only that, they're being whipped in front of you.
Wow.
So you're about to die in one of the most horrible ways a human being can die, right? While you're watching your daughters being whipped and the entire town pointing at you, calling you horrible names, and just basically lacking any level of humanity whatsoever.
Wow. That's pretty rosy.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
Really?
The guy finally makes it over. He took his sweet-ass time, didn't he?
Sure.
He finally makes it over with the torch and lights the kindling, and all of a sudden, you got the hot foot.
Yeah.
Right? The flames start to climb and climb. You're having trouble breathing. You're extremely hot. Your clothes are catching on fire.
Yeah, sure.
Your skin is blistering. The pain is about as intense as it can possibly be.
Of course.
From what I understand, burning to death in this manner can take a matter of hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
Until I die.
Yes. Or until, I guess, you're completely burned up.
Josh, that's awful.
It is pretty awful.
I can't imagine a worse way to die.
No, I can't either, Chuck. But do you want to know something?
What's that?
This actually happened to hundreds of thousands of people during the Middle Ages in Europe and later on in the United States.
We are talking about witches.
We are talking about witches. Perhaps
witchcraft.
One of the most misunderstood or reviled groups of all time in history.
Yeah. Never think about that.
No.
You probably would have said gypsies.
Yeah, but no.
Witches?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my two cents.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially after reading this article.
Yeah.
And hearing that story.
Witches got the bad end of the stick.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So where do we go from here, Josh? To the beginning?
Sure.
We don't actually know the very beginning, right? Because witchcraft and has been around since, like, there were pre-humans, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can make the case that all pre-Christian religions, with the exception of Judaism, were witchcraft, basically.
Yeah, because the article pointed out here that witchcraft, like when times were rosy, everything was great, but then when plague hit and famine and disease, then that's when people said, oh, you know, maybe we should get this shaman to cook up a little potion or say a spell to the gods, and maybe things will turn in our favor.
And if they didn't turn in their favor, then the shaman or the witch or the folk healer, whatever, usually found the entire town against him or her.
Sure.
Right?
And perhaps even burned at the stake.
But this was before a certain period. Witchcraft was basically just like whatever. It was normal, commonplace, everyday stuff.
Yeah.
And there wasn't necessarily anything like evil associated with it like we do today.
It was magic.
Right, with a K. Explain.
Yes, M-A-G-I-C-K is to differentiate. That is a common accepted spelling by modern witches to differentiate between,
real witchcraft?
David Copperfield.
Right.
That kind of magic? Or Doug Henning?
An illusion.
An illusionist?
Yes.
Or John C. Reilly as the illusionist at the end of Boogie Nights? Remember he became a magician in the end?
No, I totally forgot that.
Yeah, that's what he became after his porn career.
I forgot about that.
Anyway, that kind of magician or the other kind of magic, which is there's both black and white magic, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive as to good and evil.
Right.
As we learned.
No. At some point, though, the tide very much turned. And there's actually it turned at one point, but there were several things that led up to the turning of the tide against witches,
Didn't
right?
Didn't you say Saint Augustine had something to do with this?
Well, actually... is it Augustine?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know we always say Augustine, and you doubt his existence at times. We've gotten some email on that.
Yeah. Round about AD 420, Augustine argued that only God could suspend the normal laws of the universe. Therefore, there couldn't possibly be any such thing as what witches claim to be able to do.
Right.
Right? So basically, they may as well have just been engaged in tooth fairy studies or something like that.
Sure.
They were totally harmless, possibly wacko, but to the Christian church, they had nothing to do with anything.
Sure.
Right?
Okay.
And that view was held for a good 800 years.
So it was popular?
Yeah. So witches they went along their merry way, did their own thing. Christianity went along its merry way, did its own thing. And no real problems, right?
Right.
Until AD 1208.
Uh-oh.
And a pope named Innocent III went to war with the Cathars. You heard of these guys?
No, but I've heard of the Innocents.
Have you?
Yeah, and the third had nothing on Junior. Just let me say that.
Who, the second?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me.
Innocent II? No, we don't need to get into that.
Okay.
Go ahead, though.
Anyway, Innocent III, not Junior.
Right.
Innocent III. Did they use Junior to denote popes?
No.
Okay. Innocent III declared war on the Cathars. The Cathars were this kind of Christian sect who lived in France, I think northern France, in Languedoc.
Okay.
Okay. And they were very much convinced that on Earth, and throughout the universe, there is a very real war going on between God and the devil.
Sure.
Good and evil.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Light and dark, night and day.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And there was a very clear division, and there was a power struggle going on.
Okay.
The Cathars also clearly believed that the Roman Church, the Roman Catholic Church,
yeah,
was actually the Church of Satan.
Okay. They really believed that, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they were very much opposed to the Roman Church.
Okay.
The Roman Church had more power, led by Innocent III.
Sure.
Said, you know what, Cathars, we decided that you guys worship the devil, and not only that, we're going to create propaganda that shows that our wood carvings showing your people kissing the anus of the devil in person because you guys are devil worshipers. Take that.
Wow.
That was not a good day. The Cathars were persecuted.
They really did that?
Yeah. And to this day, they're called the Cathar heretics.
I'm sure they could have gotten by with, like, kissing the hand of the devil or something.
I saw a wood carving.
A little overboard.
It's like the devil with the cloven hoofs, and he's bent over, like, right. Kiss my ass.
Kiss my deviled butt.
Exactly. Can I go on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does it get better?
It does.
I can't imagine.
It doesn't get better for witches.
Okay.
So now we have people who oppose the church.
Yes.
Worship Satan.
Yes.
That division has just been created.
Gotcha.
Okay? And the whole reason the Pope went after the Cathars, the idea that there was a war between good and evil going on,
right,
was actually, like, 80 years later, adopted by St. Thomas Aquinas.
Okay. For him.
And he's like, okay, there is such a thing as demons, and they're here on Earth, and not only are they involved in pleasuring themselves, they really, really like to lead human beings astray from God. So this is going on. There is real evil. It's really tangible, and it's all around us all the time. We have to protect ourselves as Christians. And we have to be suspicious of other people who aren't Christians because they're probably being led astray by these demons.
Okay.
Now we start to have everyday people who can possibly be in league with the devil because it's all around us, right?
All right. And this is when this was first taking root, right?
This is the real start of it. Everything's been leading up to this point,
okay,
right? And then finally, Chuck, in 1484, we have the real seed of how we view witches and the witch scare, which led to the witch executions and persecution.
Sure.
1484, a pair of German friars took 2 years to write the Malleus Maleficarum.
Okay.
Right? It's basically a witch-finding handbook. How to seek them out, how to try them, how to execute them.
Gotcha.
Basically, these two German friars, remember the vow of abstinence, were not very happy with women, and they basically made all this stuff up. Most witches were women. To tell a witch, anyone who is suspected of it, any woman who is suspected of it, should be stripped down and searched for moles.
Right.
Right. And then also witches like to steal penises from men. Collect them, keep them in a box where they would move by themselves and eat oats and corn.
Okay.
Pretty awful idea, right?
Yeah.
And also, like, witches, when you're trying a witch, you have to lead her in backwards so she doesn't have a chance to cast spells on everybody when she's
sure.
coming in the room.
Makes sense.
Just stupid, stupid like that, right? That's probably going to get bleeped out, huh?
I think so.
Okay. And that led to the witch scare, the witch persecution, and the witch executions that we know and love today. Hundreds of thousands of people, Chuck.
Wow.
Hundreds of thousands of people were killed because these two German friars
uh-huh.
wrote this book
yep.
and just made it up.
I feel like we could stop there.
I have more. I'll try to interject it later.
So, Josh?
Yes.
Should we talk about one of the most famous of those persecutions?
Yes.
Not single persecution. A set of persecutions in 1692 in Salem, Massachusetts, of course.
Mm-hmm.
If you've read The Crucible, you know what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we go over that real quick?
I think we should.
This all started because a couple of precocious teenage girls may or may not have had clinical hysteria.
Or been bored.
Maybe epilepsy. You never know. Point is, they were having convulsions and screaming, like as if they were possessed, saying they were being pinched and poked. Is that what it was?
Yeah. By an unseen force.
Bitten and pinched, not poked, by an unseen force.
They were poked by the witch examiners, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. And the doctor, actually, the witch examiner, said, you know, they are clearly bewitched.
Right, and how? Because...
That stupid book, probably.
The stupid book. Yes.
He probably had that in his little doctor's office.
A physician. He wasn't even a witch examiner. The guy was the village physician.
Yeah, he was a
doctor. And he was like, I can't come up with any explanation, so they're clearly bewitched.
Right. And so this led to the one by one, these ladies in Salem, Massachusetts, and this was clearly before their big liberal influx of liberals in Massachusetts.
Yeah, those days are over.
Well, yeah, true.
Recently.
And these women became, you know, persecuted and accused of being witches.
So, and a couple of men, too, but yeah, mostly women.
Yeah.
Women who lived on their own.
Of course.
Which was a crime, supposedly, in Salem.
You know who didn't help? The servant.
Tituba.
Was that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a West Indian servant of one of the girls, and she really cemented the whole deal when she said that she admitted in court to dealing with the devil and flying on sticks. And said, quote unquote, they made her hurt those girls.
Yeah, she didn't help things.
Yeah, so that really sent it into high gear.
Yeah.
And what, like 20 people were killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put to death.
Yeah, one guy, Giles, I can't remember his last name, he was pressed to death with a heavy stone. He was like an old man, an elderly man, and they laid him on a big stone and put an even bigger stone on top of his chest, and the life was pressed out of him.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
I believe he was tortured to death like that because he would not confess to being a witch.
I wonder what they called that. Was that called pressing or something? It was?
Yeah.
Goodness me. That's creative. And that was that went on for a little while under the rule of the general court. But then that court was usurped by the court of the judicature.
Nice.
And they basically reversed stance, and not very many witches after that took place were persecuted.
Right. They basically said, okay, the witch hunt is over. Let's all just pretend this never happened.
Yeah. That's literally what happened.
And that was it. No more witchery.
Yeah, it said only 3 more people after that were found guilty of witchcraft, and they were even pardoned.
Yeah.
Later on. And they still don't know what was up with these 2 girls. Like we said, they could have been, you know, precocious little girls looking for attention, or they could have, you know, had some clinical hysteria.
I wrote an article for the site about this study this woman conducted, I think in the 70s, and she proposed that they were actually all poisoned by ergot.
Oh, really?
Which is a hallucinogen to humans, and that everybody got it from eating rotten grain and was basically tripping.
Well, that was one of the theories of the Enlightenment at one point.
It's a bad trip.
Was that a lot of the Enlightenment was because of bad bread.
Yeah.
Basically, people were hallucinating and coming up with all these amazing inventions.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, though.
Yeah.
So, where are we, Josh?
Well, we could start to talk about the modern era.
Okay. Well, pagan religion?
Well, do you want to talk about the different kinds of witchery around the world?
Yeah, I've got a couple I'd like to highlight.
I want to hear it, Chuck.
Okay. Josh, you know I was going to pick this one. Appalachian folk magic.
So cool. Can't you see Nell? Nay, typo Nell. Putting like a hex on somebody.
That was the worst movie ever. Appalachian folk magic, Josh, is, you know, clearly around this area of the Southeast. And they have a very much Christian-based idea of it, of a Christian God and a devil as the good and evil, like you were talking about.
Sure.
And they are can use their magic with a K for good or evil. And they look to nature for omens and, like, to portend the future.
Yeah.
And they're local, man.
Yeah, I know.
We could probably go up in North Georgia and round up a couple of these.
That would be pretty boss, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to go do that.
What's yours? Give me something.
One of my favorites is, this is the coolest name, Pennsylvania Dutch Hexcraft.
Yeah, I like
AKA
that.
AKA Powwow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it is from the, Pennsylvania Dutch area of Pennsylvania. German and Dutch settlers, including the Amish, but also including people who are reformists, like Lutherans, right? Protestants, believe in this stuff where you can create goodwill, blessings, things like that, usually for the home, by creating symbols, hexes, which... apparently, when they first arrived and they were talking to the English, they were saying sexes, six.
Oh.
But the English heard hex, and that's why it's called hexcraft. It's not the least bit dark.
Yeah, like, you think of a hex as a bad thing.
Right. You know that pineapple welcome flag that people, like, hang outside of their house sometimes?
Yeah, sure.
That's a Pennsylvania Dutch hex.
Really?
Yeah. Bless this home.
Uh-huh.
That's a Pennsylvania Dutch hex. The two partridges with a heart.
Right.
Pennsylvania Dutch hex.
What about the...
Pretty nice stuff, you know? It's real pleasant witchcraft.
What about Don't Tread on Me, the rattlesnake?
It's a little different.
That's not the same thing?
No.
Okay. And of course, we got to talk about Wicca. That's probably where we're going to spend most of our time here. Because Wicca is the most widely, even though it's the youngest, well, no, I don't know about youngest, but only, what, like 60 years old?
Yeah, about.
But it's still probably the most widely accepted form of modern witchcraft.
Right, and it's a form of paganism, right?
Let's talk about paganism.
Okay.
Because that gets a bad rap.
It does. A pagan is also often interchangeably called a heathen.
Yeah.
And basically, it's a pagan can mean either like someone who doesn't subscribe to the big three, Christianity, Judaism, or Islam.
Sure.
So any other religion, yeah, including like major established religions like Buddhism,
yeah,
Hinduism, that kind of thing.
They're technically pagan.
Or it can denote a religion that existed prior to,
sure,
Christianity, right, Judaism, Islam, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And actually, the other characteristic of it is that it's usually polytheistic.
Right.
More than one god.
Exactly. That is the characteristic, right?
Yeah.
Sort of like the rectangle square thing.
Huh?
Well, if you have multiple deities, you're definitely pagan. But if not, does it mean you necessarily aren't a pagan? Does that make sense? I just blew your mind, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Wow. So pagan actually means country person, though, in Latin. That's,
yeah,
sort of the easiest way to put it. Sort of like just a redneck.
Kind of.
You know?
Home and hearth, I think. Or, yeah, hearth dweller is the Latin translation.
Yeah, but they weren't city people and they were looked down upon, but they weren't necessarily bad or anything.
Right. They were just kind of, like you said, rednecks, bumpkins, Appalachian.
And it was later on is when they became associated with Satan.
Right. And we've seen why. Or we've seen how. I'll get to why later on because that'll blow your mind too, dude.
Okay.
Okay? But yeah, right now, as far as we know, there's pretty much only one form of witchcraft practiced in the world, seriously practiced in the world.
Yeah.
And that is Wicca.
Right.
And like you said, Chuck, it's only about 60 years old. And it was created by a guy named Gordon Gardner, right?
Gerald Gardner.
Yeah,
his brother Gordon actually was working on a different religion, and it didn't pan out.
It didn't. It just kind of petered out.
So Gordo fell by the wayside, and Gerald took over.
Right.
None of that is true, by the way. Because people are Wiccas are going to write in and say, I've never heard of Gordon.
What was his religion? We should make up a pamphlet.
And curse you!
Right. Actually, no, Chuck.
I know.
I'm glad you did that, though, because that's a great segue. There's some real misunderstandings of Wicca.
Yeah, big time.
And Wiccans. First and foremost is that they're devil worshippers.
Not true.
No, it's not true. As a matter of fact, the Wicca don't even believe that there is a devil. They don't believe in the Christian concepts of the devil or hell.
Yeah, exactly.
So how could you worship the devil if you don't even believe in
him? Exactly, Josh.
That's a big one right there. What's another misconception, Chuck?
Well, Gardner actually founded it as a life-affirming religion that does include psychic abilities and magic, but the Wicca takes an oath, or is it a Wiccan, I guess?
Yeah.
Takes an oath to not do harm. It's like, it's only for self-improvement. It's almost like, well, it's not like self-help, but it's only meant to be performed on yourself. Isn't that right?
Yeah, and technically there is an implied understanding that you could harm other people with the power that you come to harness,
yeah,
through the Wiccan rituals, but they like you said, they take an oath not to harm other people. And there's also a Wiccan belief that if you do harm other people, what is it, the rule of three? If you harm other people, another,
yeah,
person, the damage you've inflicted will come back on you threefold. So there's kind of that prohibition.
Should we talk about, I think this is really cool, the life force cosmic energy bit.
It is cool, and this is pretty much the crux of their whole thing.
Yeah, the crux of the whole thing is that Wiccans believe, well, the scientific concept we all believe is that all matter vibrates with its own energy. Wiccans believe, you don't believe that?
I don't believe that.
Wiccans believe that a witch's body has that same vibration, both physical and spiritual rate of vibration. And during these rituals they perform, they vibrate such that they can create a pathway for energy to flow through them and call on energy from the gods and deities.
Right. Rather than, I think all of us, in their opinion, have a physical molecular vibration and a spiritual molecular vibration,
yeah.
but that they learn how to meld the two together and sure. become suddenly exceedingly powerful.
Yeah, and to channel it from more powerful beings in themselves.
Right. And with,
that's the key.
And, right, yes. And because you have to invoke a deity
yeah.
to carry out one of their rituals. Do you want to talk about the Great Rite, Chuck?
That's the best one.
I think so, too. And there's a sentence in the description of the Great Rite that I just thought was so cute.
Yes, Josh. The Great Rite is one of the main central ceremonies, and there's tons and tons of them.
Well,
and they're all different.
Yeah.
And there's all different kinds of ways that you can do them. But we're going to go over just basically a generic Great Rite ceremony.
Right.
That's our disclaimer.
And we should say that there are three levels to Wicca. And each level is learned in a year and a day. Starts out as, I think, student practitioner and teacher.
Right.
So you've got witch, priestess, and then high priestess or priest.
Yes. And once you've completed all those phases, Josh, you are official and you have the power to perform these rituals.
So the Great Rite ritual is actually carried out by the coven. And we should also say Wicca can perform by themselves. They can do rituals on their own.
Yeah, sure.
But they also have covens, right?
Coven, if you're a fan of American movie. Matt, our guest producer, clearly is. He's laughing. Remember American movie? Did you see that? The documentary about... Oh, really? It's good. You should definitely see American movie.
Okay.
He makes a short film, this crazy filmmaker guy in Wisconsin, and he calls it Coven instead of Coven.
Okay.
But he thinks he's right. This is a funny thing.
You're going to see this then.
Oh, it's great.
Okay. Shall I continue?
Yes.
Okay.
So they can be in a coven or they can be...
But let's say they're in a coven.
A solitary, sure.
Right. For our purposes, we're going to describe a coven ritual. Coven ritual. Now you have me screwed up, Chuck.
I like coven more.
So you have the high priest and the high priestess of the coven, right?
Yes.
And you have the... The Great Rite ritual is to signify the coming together of... the high priest
right.
and the high priestess, the god and the goddess.
And when you say come together, you mean sexually?
Yes. Now, this can be done either symbolically.
Sure.
Using a ethem.
Yeah, sort of like a dull knife.
Yeah, it's a pretty wicked-looking ceremonial knife.
Yeah, yeah. Not used to cut things, though.
No. And that represents the phallus.
Sure.
And the cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
Represents the womb.
Yeah.
So the high priest might be like, oh, here comes the athem. And then the high priestess is like, I got the cauldron right here. And then boop, you know. And then that's the main part of the ritual, right?
I got one word for that. Boring.
Right. And so a coven may opt to actually have the high priest and the high priestess engage in the sexual act.
Yes.
To really, really just kind of...
solidify, I guess, the deal.
Get the ritual going. Yeah.
Sure.
Now, here's the really cute sentence that I thought
no,
came up in this article. Leanne Obringer, who wrote it, points out that often the high priest and the high priestess are married.
Yeah. Very cute.
It is very cute.
And they actually do not perform. The whole coven has to agree to the literal interpretation where the sexual act is performed.
Right.
And they have to all be in agreement, and it does not actually take place like Caligula style in front of everyone.
No,
they do that in private.
That's another misconception, is that they have orgies and things like that. They do have the sexual act once in a while,
right?
Like say for the Great Rite. But again, covens, apparently from this article I've come to learn, that covens are fairly democratic.
Sure.
And everyone has to be in agreement that they're either going to do it symbolically,
right,
or they're going to do it literally. Same with Skyclad, right?
Yeah, which I'd never heard of that. That means naked. Naked.
Yeah, that's what Wiccans call being naked.
Skyclad.
Skyclad.
I'm going to use that at home next time.
Yeah, I'm just skyclad, honey.
Babe, I'm going skyclad.
But again, like, you can perform a ritual skyclad, or you can do it clothed in robes. And again, that's up to the coven as a whole whether they do that. Chuck.
Josh.
What's the point of the Great Ritual, the Great Rite Ritual?
Well, it can bring good harvest. That's one reason they'll do that. And to continue the circle of life so that a new god can be born at Yule. And Yule, Y-U-L-E, we found out, is the first day of the Wiccan year is a Sabbat or holy day called Yule. Is that right?
Yeah, and that sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? The Yule log?
It does, Josh.
Huh. That's funny that something from Christmas would have to do with a pagan tradition.
Interesting.
Weird. So Yule is one of the, is it Sabbat or Sabbat?
I'm going to say Sabbat.
I'm going to go with Sabbat.
Okay.
And you say Coven, I'll say Coven, okay?
That way we get our got our bases covered. No one can write in, so we said it wrong.
Right, exactly.
We should do that for everything.
I agree.
Okay.
So Sabbat is one of the holy days, and the Wiccans observe eight throughout the year. Like Chuck said, Yule is the celebration of the winter solstice,
uh-huh.
And it's the time when the goddess gives birth to the new god. So the great rite hastens the Yule birth, right?
Correct.
After that, you have Imbolc, I-M-B-O-L-C, which is celebrated on February 2nd, right?
Yeah.
And that's when the spring crops are planted.
Yeah, like with most of these things that we've heard, they not even Wiccan, but their rites to the gods usually has to do with like harvest and growing things. And
that's what most religious holidays that we still observe today, that's where they find their roots.
Sure.
It was all agrarian.
That's what I was trying to say. You just said it a lot smarter than me, though.
Thanks.
And then there's Samhain, right?
Right.
Which had something to do with Halloween. What was the deal there?
Actually, the Wicca believe that on this night, the gauze between life and death is virtually removed, and the dead can communicate with the living. But here's what I find very cool.
What's that?
The dead's not like, go get me some cigarettes or anything like that. It's a time of celebrating with your dead family members, having a feasting with them, having
right.
Basically just hanging out with the people who in your life who died.
That's nice.
Isn't it?
So much of this gets, you know, you think it's some dark satanic ritual. It has nothing to do with any of that.
No, it doesn't.
Not to say I'm going to run out and become a Wiccan or anything, but
back in high school, my friend Stevie Cohen and I started looking into it, and
is that when the ninja thing didn't work out?
Wait, this is after.
Okay,
I was like, wait, how many rocks do we have to paint different colors, and we have to arrange them? And what? It's really, really involved stuff. Like, there's this article that Obringer wrote is pretty detailed. We've only kind of hit the surface of it, but there's even more detail to it than this, greatly.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot.
Sure.
It's a really detailed religion.
Yeah, and they have a book, you know. What's that called? The Book of Shadows?
Yeah, which I got to say doesn't really help their case to, you know, people who don't understand what they do.
Sure.
Yeah.
They could call it, you know, the Little Wiccan Handbook, and it'd probably be like a sweeter
name.
Or
the Book of Green Fairies, or the Book of Unicorns. Right. Why not?
Well, but the Book of Shadows is the witch's guidebook, and it is Coven specific. So your own coven would write like the spells and the hexes and the rules and the regulations,
mm-hmm.
what you got to wear, what time you got to show up.
Whether you're going to go skyclad.
Whether you're going to go skyclad, who has to bring the sticky buns and the coffee
right.
to the meetings, who has to clean the cauldron, that kind of thing.
Nice.
Cauldron is a real thing. We should talk about just a few of these implements, I guess, and whether or not they really use them, like the broom.
Yes.
Do they fly around on it?
No.
Why not?
Because witches can't fly.
Okay.
they do use them to purify the circle where the rituals take place.
They
cast a circle, and they have to purify the area first.
Sure.
So they're using the broom to literally sweep out the – I don't know if literally was the right word. They use the broom to sweep out the energy in the area.
Yeah.
They may also use sage, or if they want to
sure,
go for the
sage.
Double whammy, they might use a broom that features sage woven into it.
Right. And you just said casting a circle. That's a big part of most Wiccan ceremonies, and they will cast a circle. It's very important at the beginning with the north, south, east, western points.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of every ceremony, they will close that circle kind of by reversing what they did when they opened it
right.
or when they cast it.
And the points represent the elements, earth, water, fire, and air.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the pentagram. Because you probably think it's like the symbol of the devil, right?
I don't.
Okay. So, Josh, let's talk about the pentagram.
Okay.
Often seen on, you know, satanic singer band album covers.
Sure. Judas Priest.
Yeah, exactly. Because,
yeah.
you know, they worship the devil, right?
As far as the courts in the 80s were concerned, yeah.
Right. Turbo Lover clearly is a song about Satan.
Dude, Judas Priest was bitching.
Yeah, they were awesome.
Yeah.
Still are.
Sure.
So the pentacle, Josh, is a five-pointed star enclosed within a circle.
Right, and the five-pointed star is called the pentagram.
Right.
But when you put the circle around it, that's the pentacle, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so if it's upright, which is the one point up, 2 points down, it is a symbol of witchcraft and represents earth, fire, water, air, and spirit. And the circle represents the gods and goddesses that allow the energy to be focused on the pentagram.
Right, and the circle brings all these things together into a cohesive unit.
Yeah, so that's like on the cover of Rush's...
2112.
Upright. If you flip it upside down, that's when I think Satan comes into play, because it's like the goat's head or something. Isn't that right?
Yeah, but even that's just
Is that
Christian
even real?
Propaganda.
That's what I thought.
From the... that used against the Knights Templar.
Jeez.
I know.
So, you know, we mentioned they use cauldrons, and they do have certain knives, but they're never used to, like, bloodlet or anything like that. They use that one dull knife to, like, draw shapes in the sand and things like that, or to represent the phallus.
Yes. Kink.
And
the cauldron.
They have wands. They use wands.
Yeah, they do.
The wand represents fire and the life force of the witch, and it is a symbol of wisdom and healing.
They can also use a staff, usually about shoulder high.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably like the mega wand or something.
Sure.
You know?
The eye wand.
Sure.
So is that it? You got anything else?
I do have something else. I was doing a little additional research, and I came across a book review of a book called Caliban and the Witch by author Sylvia Federici.
Let's hear it.
Basically, she chronicles what happened to witchcraft, to witches, why hundreds of thousands of people were killed. And basically she says that it was part of a larger grab for power of the ruling classes from, I believe, the 15th to the 18th or 17th century.
Okay.
Right?
So it was rooted in money?
Well, yeah, she makes the point that, she believes that, first of all, women had much more power, even though it was still a patriarchy.
Yeah.
Prior to this, women still had much more power socially. They were basically unionized. They did a lot of the work, and
right.
without them and their reproductive abilities,
sure.
things would get all screwed up. So basically, to show women who was who, the church and state, which were virtually indistinguishable at the time,
right.
Said, "You know what? You're a witch. We're going to kill you." And they did it in that way that we described at the beginning, with the whole town watching, as much to punish the witch as to send a message to everybody else. Like,
sure.
You don't go against the male patriarchy. You don't go against the patriarchy, or else we will literally burn you to death at the stake and whip your daughter in front of you while this is going on. And they did it over and over again. And from this brutality, they basically were able to consolidate their power. They also simultaneously were exploring the world and subjugating other people. But at home, in the Middle Ages, no, medieval times, I'm sorry, serfs each had their own plot of land. They could do whatever they wanted.
Right.
So even if they worked for somebody else, they still had a certain sense of a certain measure of self-sufficiency.
Right.
This stuff was taken away too. Wage labor was created, and you have the roots of capitalism and basically what Federici calls the housewiving of women going on at the same time.
Right.
So the division between men and women that we still have today – and the roots of capitalism find their place back at this time in the Middle Ages, right?
Yeah.
And then one more thing, too.
What you got?
I thought this was awesome. She compares the witch scare to the terrorism scare that we're under today.
Really?
Basically saying, like, you know, people a lot of times think that the witch scare was just carried out by ignorant hicks. Not true. It may have been carried out by ignorant hicks, but it was very much encouraged and supported by the ruling class, which was the church and the state.
Right.
Right? So there were witches everywhere, which kept people afraid and occupied and kept what you were able to keep them down through this.
Gotcha.
They were too busy chasing shadows and killing innocent people. Same thing's going on with terrorism. It's not a perfect analogy because there really are terrorists in the world.
Sure.
But the amount that it's – the proportion that it's grown to is similar.
Wow. Good stuff.
Thanks.
And that's a new book, I guess?
I think it's – the review I read was from early November.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Anything else, Josh?
That's it, man.
Good stuff.
Thanks. Chuck?
Josh.
like I said, we just kind of glanced the surface.
There's so many more rituals and so many kinds of covens and witches and potions and hexes, and we'd spend hours talking about that.
I think we have.
Okay.
You can type witchcraft in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com to get a lot more information on that. And now, I guess then, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Ninja Teenagers. Hi, Chuck and Josh. Basically, let me set this up because it's kind of long. This kid grew up in Southern California, or I'm sorry, in the suburbs of California. Mm-hmm. And he and his, in the 80s, like we did, and he and his buddies were really into ninjas. Nice. So they decided to do what you did and train as a ninja.
Nice.
In the suburbs of whatever, I guess you were in Ohio at the time. Mm-hmm. And so they had a house next door that was just randomly occupied. Like, people would be there and then they wouldn't be there. They never knew anything about it, but it was usually empty. So they decided to go into that backyard ninja style and creep around. So picture this, three preteen nerds ninja walking, shuffling, and crawling silently along the neighbor's side yard with homemade weapons in hand. They made like nunchucks and stuff like that. And just as we pass the sliding glass door, the lights spring on. We are completely bathed in light. Lock eyes with this nice Asian family standing there, suitcases in hand.
Oh, no.
Having just arrived from the airport. I swear no one moved for at least a five count, and we all just stood there surprised, and we were frozen in our perfect ninja poses. Then we jumped up, ran off in a very non-assassin-like panic to our homes and our rooms, waiting for the inevitable knock on the door. So it turns out they were an Asian family that spent most of their time in Asia and would just come back to the States for weeks at a time. And so they came home to the three ninja teens. He has no idea what this poor family must have thought, still numb with jet lag, having just arrived in America, to flip on the light and be met with the sight of three diminutive ninja. And it still makes him laugh, and that is from Jeremy. Jeremy also says, tell Josh when he says recidivism is one bonehead word, I get it.
Nice.
And Josh, while we're on ninjas, I just wanted to bring up, during that episode, you said something that you called Puda Puda Puda.
Right, which in Japanese means very fluent.
We got a lot of email that they had no idea what this meant, including this email from Jupe in Shanghai, China, that is. And Jupe was very enthused because he works with a Japanese person.
Oh, okay. So I was going to say, how does that qualify him?
Yeah, he tries out these Japanese phrases he hears, so he went up to her and said, Puda Puda Puda.
No.
And she followed that with impersonating a bird, including elbow movements, telling me she thought I was talking about shaky things. And so he wants to know, what the heck, why did you embarrass him like that with Puda Puda Puda?
I feel like my work here is done.
No, you have to explain.
Actually, Puda Puda Puda, as Juke found out, does not exist. I made it up. The real word is pata pata. It's onomatopoeia in Japanese for okay. Fluent, the way people talk very quickly when they're fluent in something, right? Pata pata.
Gotcha.
So I just started to call it Puda Puda Puda. And as a result, we got a couple of self-created uh-huh. Japanese pronunciation guides from very concerned listeners
yeah.
who were worried like we were either having, or I was having a stroke, or just right. was that off.
Or maybe you were a witch.
Maybe.
Full
so
circle.
We have a phone number for a guy who works with the Japanese consulate in San uh-huh. Francisco
yeah.
anytime we need pronunciation. And my long-suffering half Okinawan girlfriend is always a good source of information, although I like to learn it my own way.
Of course. So,
pera pera is pura pura pura.
Pura pura upon your home. Good sir.
It doesn't mean anything.
I like it.
Okay. Pura 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 upon all of your homes. We just decided that that's our own little bit of Pennsylvania Dutch hexcraft.
Yes.
Which means it's a good thing, right?
Uh-huh.
If you have your own little version of hexcraft, or a blessing for Chuck and I that we can share with other people, put it in an email and send it to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.